It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. In the wake of Me Too, there's a question that's been rolling around in my mind. What is wrong with men? I've read a bunch of articles suggesting the problem is toxic masculinity, but today, we've got a story about a group of people who think just the opposite. That one of the biggest problems in America is that men are under attack. Literally. Alexandra Hall has our story, which begins with a Wisconsin police report.
This is Detective Hummerkaus, case number 2017. This is an interview with Thaddeus Paul.
This is May 2017. Thaddeus Paul is meeting up with a group of guys he had met online.
So, Thaddeus, just tell me what had happened during this incident that you reported to us, starting from the beginning and going all through the end.
Okay. So I was meeting up with some friends at Mackesy's,
an Irish pub on State Street in Madison.
We were just in the bar talking, having a good time.
They had never met in person before.
We were there for a few hours
talking about politics.
And then around 10 or 11, we were going back to a friend's apartment.
He decided to go pick up some cigarettes, so he separated from the group.
Popped back out, saw that they were gone.
He's walking alone on a dark street and is approached by a group of guys wearing hoodies.
Just a group of 3 to 4 white guys.
With backpacks, and one of them noticed that he was wearing a shirt that said Basket of Deplorables 2016.
We were all Trump supporters.
One of the guys yells,
he voted for Trump.
He's wearing a Trump shirt. He's a Nazi.
And then the next thing I know, I'm on my back on the ground. And they were attacking me with some sort of
some kind of blunt object.
I think it would be more like a 2x2.
They shattered his cell phone and beat him pretty badly.
They took some chunks out of my knuckles, a couple like chunks out of the top of my head too.
Blood coming down one side of his forehead, blood pouring down one side of his face.
I'm not exactly sure how long that was going on, but two girls happened to be walking back to their apartment. When the girls came onto the scene, they scattered.
The police never verified or arrested anyone. No one was ever charged. But Thaddeus, in the police report, talks about, you know, I think it was anti-fascist activists. I think it was Antifa.
So this kind of political violence has become not routine, but not unexpected either. Alexandra Hall is an investigative reporter, and she first heard this story when she was working on a ProPublica project called Documenting Hate.
We're looking for hate groups in Wisconsin. My boss told me about the story. The headline was, Madison Police Investigating Possible Ambush of Proud Boy by Anti-Fascists. And I thought, who are the Proud Boys?
So she investigated. And heads up to parents, the story is not appropriate for children.
The Proud Boys are a fraternal organization. That's how they describe themselves. They're a men's drinking club. Politically, most of them self-identify as libertarians. Most of them are Trump supporters. And they're big fans of Gavin McInnes.
All right. Let's before we take these calls, I want to see these Dove beauty spots.
Gavin McInnes is a comedian and a writer. He's one of the original co-founders of Vice Media. He's been called the father of hipsterdom.
It's time for our Feminism is Cancer segment. Feminism is cancer! Feminism is cancer! I'm a lady!
He left the company in 2008 over creative differences. And since then, he's hosted a series of online right-wing talk shows. And he's known as being really provocative.
By the way, ladies, can I just pause it? Beauty is a thing, okay? And obesity is not beautiful. That's not a personal taste. That's Darwinian. Fat people don't make good moms because they die. So genetically, we're not attracted to someone who's going to die. And it's got nothing to do with me. I'll f*** you.
He is very offensive towards women.
A mouth's a mouth. I'll let you beep me.
Blatantly so.
But we're not attracted to you because genetically we are looking for a mate. Oh, that woman could give me children. And when we see that the mother will die, our penises go, that is not a good investment. We will lose her.
And during the last presidential campaign, he founded the Proud Boys.
The 10 ways to save America. Abolish prison. Give everyone a gun. Legalize drugs and welfare. Close the borders. Outlaw censorship. Venerate the housewife. Glorify the entrepreneur. Recognize the West is the best. Ideally, number 10, shut down the f***ing government.
We're all sick of the grievance industry. We're all sick of being ashamed. We all want a modicum of decorum. We all want to improve our lives. We want to get better. But what's the name of our movement? What do we call ourselves? I got it. We are called the Proud Boys.
So this is a comedian founding a political group? Is it a political group?
They have chapters throughout the country, you know, San Francisco, L.A., this is where all the Proud Boys are, Seattle, Tennessee, Wisconsin, Vermont. There's also the Proud Boys' girls, not the Proud Girls, the Proud Boys' girls. It's hard to say how many members there are. They have closed Facebook groups for vetting potential members. Their public Facebook group has around 22,000 followers.
When they've been covered in the press recently, which they have been a tiny bit, usually people talk about them as possibly a white nationalist group, maybe a white power group. That's not exactly what you found.
In any of the coverage that we did see about the Proud Boys, the journalists were, you know, trying to suss out whether or not the Proud Boys were racist or whether they believed they were racist or not. And none of them really brought up their views towards women. And once I started interacting with them online and watching Gavin McInnes's videos on YouTube, I realized that there's this whole online culture of YouTube personalities, conservatives appealing to millennials. They watch their YouTube videos all the time, and that's where they get a lot of their ideas. And they have been having this online conversation for some time now. It's now just that now that Donald Trump is president, it's entered the public sphere. So describe for me what the Proud Boys believe and what they stand for.
Well, it's a men's club.
A lot of it does come from Gavin McInnes, so I figured I might as well go straight to the source.
It's just a men's club. What is the Knights of Columbus about? What are the Elks Lodge about? What are all men's groups about? I love meeting these guys once a month and going through our rituals and drinking beer and hanging out with them. And I loved West Fest, where we all went to Vegas and shot guns and got drunk. It was like being with a bunch of Vikings, and it was a blast. That's why we do it, because there's a real war on masculinity in this country that starts in kindergarten and goes all the way up to adulthood, and it's not natural. There's no big massive agenda. There's no secret tome, secret ritual where there's a big plan to start World War III. There's no, like, our views on abortion or race or anything. That there isn't a list of that. There's no criteria. There's no political criteria to get in. All of that has been injected by the liberal media, by fake news.
He's really defensive right off the bat. Why is that?
This American Life did a story where they reported that one of the organizers of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville was a Proud Boy. Gavin McInnes claims that person was never a member of the Proud Boys and that the group disavows all white nationalism or Nazis.
The left is obsessed with Nazis, and everything might be racist. Everything might be white supremacy.
You know, I'm just asking what the group believes, and then you went into what you're not.
Right, because I know you're from NPR,
right?
And I know you have a liberal bent here, and I with journalists with your background, I tend to spend a disproportionate amount of time averting the white power allegation.
Okay. Well, can you tell me what you are about?
Yes. It's nothing. It's just a men's club.
So you went to meet some of the local Proud Boys.
I met them at a brewery.
So thanks for meeting with me.
At a shopping mall on the outskirts of Milwaukee.
Hey, did you say that you were going to record this?
Yeah, I am.
With your cell phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
At first I met Patrick. We chatted a little bit. He was friendly. Then Eric and Brad showed up.
So you're saying basically all one bill besides her?
We'll see how she behaves. I might
Went straight to the bar.
It put these two beers and the fries on my tab.
I had already talked to Eric over Facebook. He's the Wisconsin chapter president. Brad and I had had a brief phone conversation before in which he warned me not to even bring up the topic of white nationalism or the interview was over.
Okay.
He and or Gavin McGinnis might sue Wisconsin Public Radio.
So when you asked them how they got into the Proud Boys to begin with, they all keep referencing Gavin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard of Gavin on YouTube a couple years ago.
They're very big fans of his.
I like smart, funny people, and he's that to a T. Part of why I joined Proud Boys, besides having similar political views, is I love political banter, drinking, and I haven't run into any Proud Boy yet who can't hold their ground in an intellectual debate.
I found the Proud Boys just by being a fan of Shock Jock Radio growing up. You know, it's something I listened to both growing up and, you know, in my time in the Navy, and kind of got turned on to Gavin McGinnis. Gavin's show was something I listened to daily, kind of getting ready for work and stuff. And, you know, with the emergence of the Proud Boys, it was kind of at first the fan club for that show.
Were they wearing, don't the Proud Boys have kind of a uniform?
Oh, yeah, they do.
What is it? What were they wearing?
I don't mean to laugh. They wear a Fred Perry polo shirt. It's black with yellow trimming. That's their uniform. That's what they wear.
They're big on rituals, right? I mean, we should pause to mention this whole thing about the degrees.
Yeah, so becoming a Proud Boy is a multi-step process. The first one is declaring you're a Proud Boy and saying, I am a proud Western chauvinist who refuses to apologize for creating the modern world. You just have to say that out loud. The second degree is getting punched by other guys.
No less than five guys.
While you try to name five breakfast cereals.
Yeah. Say that again.
It's all about adrenaline control.
If you're
able to get punched by five guys and still manage to squeak out five cereals, yeah, you're probably okay.
You can find there's a bunch of videos of a group of guys in a park. They're punching him and, you know, he's saying Cocoa.
Cheerios.
Yeah, Wheaties, you know, and trying to get it out. And then afterwards they all hug and they, you know, proud of your boy.
To protect your family.
Yeah.
And yourself.
Yeah.
Another part of the second degree is this thing called no wanks, where you give up masturbation.
I'm not a wanker.
You're a no wanks?
I'm a no wanks guy.
I take advantage of my once a month.
The way that Gavin words it is,
this is my way of getting guys off the couch, right?
And they should get out there and use that energy to meet women and start businesses. The third degree is getting a Proud Boy tattoo.
Or is that the only way to third degree? Yeah. I can't remember.
Is there any way out of getting a tattoo?
I don't know.
And the fourth degree is getting in a fight on behalf of the cause. A Proud Boy will get beat up for wearing a MAGA hat, Make America Great Again hat. Or they'll be at a rally and they'll get in a fight with someone and get beat up. And you are an honorary fourth degree because, you know, we feel sorry for you because you got beat up because you're a Proud Boy. You know, they seem really pissed off and irritated about woke culture and the PC culture, that they feel like they have to apologize for being guys all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Proud Boys are about is not having to apologize for being a man's man. And they want to return to that.
Politically, if you had to nail us on the spectrum, I would say 95% of us land on the new right. They're socially liberal, fiscally conservative. They don't really care if you're gay or anything like that. But they think that tradition has some value, and it's been, you know, we've thrown out the baby with the bathwater, quite literally. And, you know, these women are letting their ovaries dry up for some stupid career in blogging. How old are you?
29.
Ooh, so you're right there. You got to stop dating comedians and musicians and start thinking seriously about your mate.
Yeah, cool.
It seems like he makes a giant right turn right there. He's talking about libertarian politics and suddenly he's asking you whether you're planning on having babies.
I think that's kind of his MO.
I think feminism is obsolete. It definitely had a place. Women needed to vote. Women needed to drive. But the pendulum has swung way past that. So I would say feminism was done in maybe 1979. And since then, it's just been women inventing problems and lying. Like saying one in four women will be sexually assaulted or raped in college, or saying that women earn less than men.
Do you think that those statistics about sexual assault and the wage gap is just that it's not true?
Well, I don't think you've looked it up if you think they are. And that makes me think, why do you care? Which makes me think you don't care, which makes me think you need to find a man. You need to focus on creating and shaping lives, because you don't sound like that tiny percentage that would be better off in the workforce. I think you'd make a great mom. You're clearly curious.
I don't even know what to say about that. What did you think?
I thought it was a distraction. I thought it was strange that he was making it personal.
Why don't you be curious about the quality of the schools your kids are at?
If you look online, I feel like a lot of the Proud Boys blog posts that they write are pretty offensive, seem borderline angry.
At women?
Yeah.
That's
what do you guys think
strong.
About feminism?
It's cancer. Eric
Can
has
you
an
say
opinion.
More about that?
I just think it's taken so much away from the traditional family that it's kind of contributed to the degradation of the American family as a whole and what's seeming to be anti-male.
You know, they always have these memes, women on the right, women on the left, and the women on the right are like platinum blonde, MAGA hat, super sexy looking 20-something-year-old girl. And then on the left, this overweight woman with green hair all tatted up with like a PETA shirt. And it says, which would you prefer? Basically, it's kind of like, are you with Trump or are you with Bernie? Make the choice. What kind of girls do you want to hook up with?
Men and women are physiologically created different. Because of their physiological biochemical makeup, men and women are predisposed to gravitate towards different fields.
Do you think that's the case?
I do think that's the case, absolutely.
So what are the fields that women gravitate towards?
Healthcare, for one. I think nursing, for one. That's one. Teachers. Early childhood education. And men. Engineering fields. Math fields.
Are you saying that, like, men are better at math than women?
No.
So
my little
saying?
Sister's a biomedical engineer. She's great.
They have a lot of ideas about where women would be happiest at home versus in the workplace.
Housewives are looked down upon, like they're not doing enough when really they're shaping lives. And I mean, what's more important than that?
And what do you think about women who aren't housewives?
That's their choice.
They were very cautious about, hey, if you don't want to be a housewife, that's cool with us. But for the housewives who want to be housewives, don't look down on them.
Personally, I love the idea of my wife staying home to raise my kids. I love that. If I have to be at work and stay late at work, there's somebody there that's taking little Timmy to baseball practice or picking Sarah up from soccer practice. And certain people have attempted to make them feel bad for that. And we're done. We're venerating the housewife. That is on a pedestal now. That is the same merit as being a doctor. My wife is a doctor. My wife is a housewife. They're to me, as far as stature is concerned, they hold the same weight.
So much of this conversation seems curiously nostalgic. You know, like they're nostalgic for the days when moms stayed home with kids and dads had jobs that they could count on.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I don't know how many of the Proud Boys actually believe all of that. Gavin is a whole nother thing. He's saying, I believe 95% of women would be happier at home. You need to go home.
We want women to be happier. We want guys to stop ignoring them and masturbating to porn. We want guys to stop treating them like a colostomy bag for someone else's ejaculate. You know, the feminist mentality bodes very well for guys who just want to screw women and then dump them when they become 35.
I think if women had their heads screwed on properly, they'd realize that it's these so-called sexists who have their best interests in mind. We don't want them dumped. We don't want them giving the milk away for free because we want them to sell the cow. And no, for the record, women earn more than men when they're your age before they make babies. They end up earning less over time because they choose to. Women tend to choose jobs that are less strenuous, less risky. They tend to want to go home for their daughter's piano recital rather than stay at the office all night, and that costs them promotions down the line. So the wage gap is an easy myth to debunk. It takes you, honestly, 60 seconds. And when feminists harp on it, I go, yeah, you're pretending to care. You're virtue signaling, and it's a waste of everyone's time. It's a pain in my ass.
You kept your cool. Remarkably.
I mean, probably if you had a video camera in the studio as I'm doing the interview, my eyes got wide a few times. Did you find a source that debunked that myth?
You're still... This is news to you? Do you know that Santa's not real?
That's Gavin McInnes talking with reporter Alexandra Hall. She's with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism and Wisconsin Public Radio. And a couple of things. First, if you're curious about the wage gap or those campus rape statistics, we posted some links on our website at ttbook.org. But we just heard the founder of a popular right-wing men's group talk about venerating women while simultaneously referring to them as colostomy bags and cows. We'll talk more about that after this. I'm Ann Strangechamps, and this is To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Ann Strangechamps. We're talking about men's issues this hour, and reporter Alexandra Hall has been telling us about the Proud Boys, a right-wing men's club with chapters across the U.S. The group's founder, Gavin McInnes, believes feminism went too far and that most women would be happier as housewives. We're talking about why those views are appealing to large numbers of young white men. And to remind you again, parents, the next part of this story includes references to adult sexuality, probably not appropriate for kids. So what I hear is a couple of things. There are a lot of phrases like, you don't want your ovaries to dry up, or you want guys to buy the cow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these references that are, I find, very demeaning to women. But in the next breath, he'll tell you that he really venerates women. And this whole line about venerating the housewife.
Maybe you don't know the term veneration.
Why don't you explain it to me?
To venerate someone is to put them on a pedestal. You know, as Ann Coulter says, conservatives are beyond feminism because they see women as sentient beings. They see them as magical. We think giving birth is a magical thing. So we don't see her as some slave stuck in the kitchen making us spaghetti. We see her as the sort of goddess of the home who created it, who created the lives in it, who's shaping the lives in it, who's helping the community have cohesion. We just go out and work on the factory floor all day, working on the assembly line. And then we come back to this oasis, this beautiful paradise.
It seems like a combination kind of putting women on a pedestal, but also vilifying women based on bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really confusing.
You did have this weird interaction with one of them. Can you tell me that story?
Yeah, it was over Facebook. Yeah, because this happened before I interviewed Gavin. I thought the story might not happen because most of the members of the Facebook group just, you know.
Nobody wanted to talk.
Nobody wanted to talk. And Eric sent me a little blurb about what they're about, that he likes hanging out with other men and Western values, and, you know, asked him if he would be interested in an interview, and he said he would think about it. And then I think it was a Sunday morning, I looked at my Facebook messages, and he had sent me a message late that Friday night saying, should I bring the condoms? Because I know when you hear the truth, you're going to be ready. And then it showed that at 8 a.m. the next morning, he said, oh, sorry about that. I got a little rowdy last night.
What did you think when you got that?
I was irritated. I felt like this guy's wasting my time. He thinks this is a joke. He's not taking it seriously and creating a lot of work for me that is leading nowhere. But then I thought, actually, this is exactly who they claim to be. So why don't I just let it play out? Mm-hmm. One of your members sent me a message on Facebook saying, should I bring the condoms to our interview? Because I know when you hear the truth, you're going to be ready. Is that family values?
That's funny values. If you're going to play with the big boys as a journalist, you should have a sense of humor. You can't be a church lady and simultaneously a feminist. Oh, someone made a joke. Now I'm a lady. Ooh, don't offend me. It's like women don't want to be equal to men. They want to be treated special.
I just don't see... That just seems like it conflicts a lot with what you're saying and your theories about, like, venerating women.
You think bringing condoms was a demeaning, sexist thing to say?
You don't think it is?
That was a joke.
It wasn't a joke. He apologized for it.
Yeah, well, he clearly figured out how you're going to frame it the way you're framing it right now. Do you think he literally wanted to know if he should bring prophylactics to the meeting? No? So that's a joke.
So is all of this a joke? Are the Proud Boys a joke? What is a joke and what's not? Is there anything that's serious about it?
I think that the left is willfully ignorant of jokes when it suits them. There's some meaning behind all this, and there's a lot of humor in all of this, like most guy stuff. And I think for you to pretend that you can't isolate what's a joke and what isn't is disingenuous.
I guess I'm just trying to understand what you're saying in relation to all this that you said about...
You're not trying to understand anything. And you're trying to make this story fit your narrative. And to do that, you have to pretend that you don't get jokes and pretend that I'm inconsistent and pretend that I'm ignoring the looming Nazi threat. And I think it's evidence that you're doing the wrong job.
So we're back to your job again. What do you make of that why can't you take a joke defense?
I had interviewed an analyst for this story from the Southern Poverty Law Center. His assessment of the Proud Boys and of the alt-right and the alt-light in general is that they use plausible deniability. Everything's like kind of a joke all the time. So like, just in case you have any critique of what they believe, they can come back and say, look at our rituals, look at the serial beatings. And they can say basically that it's all a joke.
But also this, you know, this is a pretty common defense. You say something offensive, and when somebody says, wait a minute, that's offensive, then you say, it's a joke. What's the matter with you? It's kind of a way to cut people's feet out from under them, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. And it's so ironic because they're constantly talking about it's free speech. It's free speech. It's the free market of ideas. Why are you trying to restrict it? And yet you're threatening me with a lawsuit if I even ask you about white nationalism in an interview, and even asking Gavin McInnes what the Proud Boys represents elicits this defensive, I see what you're doing, left-wing, liberal, fake news media, and this anger.
Coupled with, I don't think you should have this job. I think you should stay home and be a mom.
Right. I know that some of it is serious. You know, he seemed to had kids and became a dad. And it sounds like once he became a father, he really had this come to Jesus moment. And now that's why I think a lot of his discussion around men and women in their late 20s, early 30s is about, you know, you really need to settle down because, like, this is what life's really about.
The other thing that comes across pretty loud and clear is how embattled they feel. It's like they really feel sort of under siege, that they're out of step with mainstream community. And they sounded like they feel like they take risks saying what they really believe in public.
Yeah. And I think that there's some legitimacy to that. You know, Patrick tells the story of going to his neighbor's house.
I was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. We're all hanging out drinking beers in the backyard.
His neighbor wouldn't let him use the bathroom in their house.
And I laughed, thinking they were joking, and they were dead serious. They now look at it as like a personal affront. If you have a different political view, I'm kind of appalled by it because I'm so free speech more than anything.
They say that they're targeted for their political beliefs. Eric has been doxxed, where they post your address, phone number, your employer online.
They never would tell you their last names, right?
I know their last names. But yeah, they didn't want to go on the record with their last names.
The first name basis, that's exactly why. Because to, you know, allow somebody to be cast away from a job that they've worked very hard to attain is something that I don't want our side to face. I don't want their side to face. I don't ever want any of our people going after people's jobs. That's something.
I'll never lose my job because of this, but my wife might.
Yeah.
They come across to me, just listening to this conversation, as thoughtful, caring, really rational. Yeah, like they felt okay about the whole evening.
Yeah. They were pretty drunk, so...
We're good, we're good.
It is a drinking club.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I think that we represented our side candidly and honestly, so run with
Thank
it.
You for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Plus, make sure like you state the obvious.
Very good looking,
intelligent, witty.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally. Breaking news.
That's not fake news.
So, and actually, Brad didn't know about the condoms. Comment. Huh. I didn't bring it up during our interview because I didn't know how Eric would react. So Brad said, you know, wow, what an asshole.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did. And I was like, wow, I'm really surprised to hear you say that. Free speech, right? And he was like, yeah, but tact, am I right?
Alexandra Hall's reporting on the Proud Boys was a joint project for Wisconsin Public Radio and the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and also part of ProPublica's Documenting Hate project. When we come back, we're going to put this story in some historical context. Warren Farrell, the father of the men's rights movement, joins us. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX. The 1970s was the era of second-wave feminism. Ms. Magazine, Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan. But what a lot of people don't remember is that it also sparked the men's liberation movement. One of its early leaders was Warren Farrell, author of The Myth of Male Power. That book was a core text of the men's rights movement, but Farrell says he never considered the men's movement a backlash to feminism, more like a continuation.
The blessing that the women's movement gave to girls and women was basically saying to girls, let's say there's you're married and you're both man and woman have a job and relatively decent job, and the woman becomes pregnant. The woman says basically to herself, I have three options here. Option one is to be full-time involved with my children. Option two is to be full-time involved with my workplace. Option three is to do some combination of both. The man just sort of sits back and he says, oh, yeah, I have three options too. Option one is work full-time. Option two is work full-time. Option three is work full-time. And then if he earns a great deal of money, he calls it power. But power, if you feel obligated to earn money that often somebody else spends while you die sooner, I think that's a very deficient definition of power. And there's been no men's movement to help boys question that paradigm.
So I want to bring in the men's rights movement here and sort of what this is a response to, because you are commonly called the father of the men's rights movement. What do you see as the goal here, as the value of this movement?
The men's rights movement in its sort of current form is like someone who is shouting to be heard for 30 years and has not been heard. And when people shout to be heard, they get hurt, they get mean, they distort, they do anything to get attention. And so many people in the men's rights movement are highly intelligent and thoughtful. Other people in the men's rights movement feel that women have gotten a lot of opportunities that men don't have and that nobody sees the opportunities that men don't have.
And we should point out, I mean, there is a nasty side to all of this. As one reporter has called it, you know, it's an army of misogynists and trolls on the internet.
Yes. Well, first of all, it isn't an army of, but many of the people in the men's movement are so hurt and in such pain that they're shouting out. And when people don't get heard, as in any relationship, they start getting meaner and meaner and angrier and angrier. And so if we want to do the best we can, is instead of saying trolls or army of, let's say, what are they trying to say that we aren't hearing? When the women's movement first surfaced, I remember, and I was on the board of NOW in New York City, as you know, I remember being on the Barbara Walters show, in the Today Show, and Barbara Walters said, well, how can you be part of a movement where you have people like Kate Millett, who is bisexual? This was a number of years ago when this was considered not okay. And I said, Barbara, first of all, people who are bisexual may see the heterosexual world more clearly than we do. Why don't we open our ears to what the women's movement is saying? And instead of calling them dykes and bra burners, why don't we hear their best intent? And that led me to spending a good part of my life supporting the women's movement and trying to articulate to men who were feeling threatened by it what the women's movement's best intent was.
We should just reiterate this point because, I mean, this is kind of fascinating. I mean, you who are so identified with the men's rights movement, I mean, back in the 70s, you worked for the National Organization for Women. You were called the Gloria Steinem of men's liberation. I think that's going to surprise a lot of people.
And really, the myth of male power was really inspired in many respects by Betty Friedan's second book, a second major book called The Second Stage, in which she said that we've done a great job with women, and now we have to focus on men. And if we don't focus on men, the second stage of the women's movement, we will be in trouble. But there's an underlying reason that we don't listen to men, and that is because part of what toxic masculinity is about is men, in order to become successful, have to learn to repress their feelings, not express their feelings. So when a man is feeling down and depressed, we don't hear about it. But he may act out instead, like drinking, driving, or getting DUIs. And so the parents focus on the DUIs, and that we don't focus on the hurt and the pain that is leading to the DUIs, the questions that aren't being asked. And we have things, for example, like, you know, we have, I think it's six offices, federal offices of women's health. We have no offices of men's health, even though men die sooner. If we consider ourselves progressive and liberal, we need to see the pain of men as well as women, and boys as well as girls. And that's our next evolutionary mandate.
Warren Farrell. He's often called the father of the men's movement, and he wrote the classic Myth of Male Power. And that was Steve Paulson talking with him. You know, boys start getting the message about what it means to be a man young. Sometimes really young.
My uncle told me when I was 7 years old, you're the man of the house. You got to take care of your mother and your sister and your baby brother, like, at seven. And I just want to go play. And he told me that. I was like, what does that mean?
This is Ashanti Branch. He's a high school teacher and mentor in Oakland, California. And when he first started teaching, he noticed that a lot of the boys at his school were kind of checked out. They weren't going to class, they weren't doing their work, and the majority of them weren't graduating. So Ashanti did something that seemed at first pretty simple. He started an after-school club for boys. And in that club, he pushed them to take off what he calls the male mask.
You know, the mask is, it's a thing that we show the world. Like when we walk out to our homes to work, to school, to play, most people, they're clear that they have a mask that they show the world. And so I think that with a lot of our young men, this idea like, let me just show everybody that I'm happy, funny, cool, athletic, intelligent, smart, hard, you know, whatever the characters that they show. And then there's that stuff sometimes that is just like, people couldn't handle this stuff. People couldn't handle knowing that I'm dealing with sadness or fear or depression. And also, in our society, there's not a lot of respect for a man who's afraid or who's sad. Some of our work is helping our young men have a safe place so that they can talk about the stuff that's really happening, all of it. So when they go out back to the world, they're not like built up all this pressure that's waiting to explode. And that's what I think sometimes happens with a lot of our young men.
So for you personally, I mean, what was the mask you grew up wearing and how did you adopt it? And at what point did you realize it was getting in your way?
Oh, man. I'll say middle school was where this like a lot of transformation was happening. You know, I knew that in my head, I thought I was kind of smart. But in middle school, it's not cool to be smart. And so my mask was like getting sliding by. Whatever, I don't care about this. No, I didn't do the homework because I didn't want to. It wasn't until this one teacher pulled me aside and really adjusted my thinking, you know, because I was dealing with a lot of sadness. You know, my father died before I was born. Who do you cry out to about the fact that you're sad every time you see a father like picking up his son from school? Mm-hmm. When you see a father come to back to school night, who do you talk to about that? Like, my friends couldn't talk to them about it. So I just had to hold it and I had to pretend like it didn't really exist.
What did this teacher say to you that changed?
She had a speech, right? She was talking for about a long time. I don't remember much of it. I do remember one sentence. So I was like staring at the corner. I'm not going to look at her, right? Because if she's lecturing me, I'm just not going to ignore her. But she said, I know you're sad. And that's the only reason I started listening. Because she was like, what? You can't call me sad. I'm a black boy from Oakland. Like the one thing I cannot be is seen as sad. So I look because I'm about to rebuttal her statement. And she's like, I know you're sad that your father died before you were born. And I was like, whoa, now you're talking my business. I'm looking at her in her eyes. I'm like, how dare you, right? Because now I'm ready to like go in rage. Like I'm getting angry. I am sad, but I don't want people to know it. And she said, you know, but life doesn't give you what you want. Life gives you what you get. And you got to make the most out of it. And that sentence, like, is what I remember changing my life. You know, so you're too smart to be acting like you're not. And I don't know if it was the next day or a few days later, but I remember teachers coming up to me saying, what's going on with you? Like, you're doing work. Like, you're paying attention. Like, you're showing, like, I'm like, it never was that I couldn't do the work. I didn't care.
You know, you said the one thing a black boy from Oakland cannot be is sad. Like, why?
Yeah. It's dangerous. Like, if you're walking around sad as a young man, you're seen as weak. And if you're seen as weak, you're seen as opportunity for prey. I believe, and what we do in Ever Forward, we believe that that pressure of building up, of trying to pretend that you don't feel, is why our prisons are filled with 90% men, 93% men. Like, statistically, you would think that just men are bad.
I was watching this documentary that showed you working with some young men, and they were all kind of sitting in a circle, and you gave them each a drawing of a mask. So can you describe the exercise and then tell us what happened after you did the exercise? How do the boys respond? What changes?
Well, you know, when they were coming to film, I told them that this circle I meet with, they're really great at young men, but they don't always are not really honest about how they're doing. So they had this mask and they wrote on the outside, what are the things they let people see? And then I asked them to turn it over and think about the things they don't let people see. When they read off the front, oh, I show the world that I'm happy, I'm funny. Maybe someone on the front said, I show the world that I'm angry. But then on the back, most of them were just like fear, sadness. I'm like, oh, man, I never got them to open up. Like, they were always saying, like, they were good. Oh, I'm good. Everything's good. I scale from 1 to 10. I'm a 10. I'm like, but they're not.
Did anything change after that? Like, the next time they came in, did they just cover it all up again?
Those who were at the taping that day, they had begun to build a deeper community. The ones who didn't show up, they're like, what happened? What's going on? And they're like, dude, you missed it. You know, you missed it. You right? And so our meetings began to get a little deeper. And a lot of those young men, you know, went on to do some incredible things.
So tell me about one young man. And what changed for him as a result of being able to talk about being sad or feeling grief or whatever and have other guys around him be able to hear it and say it's okay?
Yeah, there's so many stories. I think I'll speak to one which is really near and dear to my heart. So Lorenzo, who now has come full circle. He now is a mentor forever forward. When I first met him, he was funny, seriously funny. Very charismatic. He says when he first came, he came because there was free food, right? And, you know, he was living on couches from people. He was, like, homeless for a lot of times. And some of the things I didn't know because he never told me till later. When we went on our first college trip, we were at the beach, and the students went out and did their reflection. They do a little quiet time. And I went over to him, and he was just, you know, there in the sand. I don't think he'd ever been to the beach before. And he was just crying, you know? And I said, what's going on? He's like, all this time in my life, he didn't realize that there was a place where he could just be accepted for who he was and be around other students who were really just pushing him to be better. And there's more stories. There's so many stories of young men who have finally awakened themselves to the fact that they're human. Man, it's just amazing to watch it happen.
Ashanti Branch is the founder and executive director of the Ever Forward Club in Oakland, California. More than 90% of the kids who've taken part in the club have gone on to college. His work was featured in the documentary The Mask You Live In. So I learned a lot of things from raising my own son. How to get a fish hook out of a face. Actually, it was more like how not to get a fish hook out of a face. How to deal with a pack of 10-year-old boys who think it is super hilarious to tell every yo mama joke they've ever heard while you're fixing the lunch. How to handle it when your kid comes home from school and says his teacher told the class, girls rule, boys drool. And one other thing I learned is that I really hate that phrase, man up. Well, so does hip-hop artist and poet Kyle Guante Tron Meyer.
10 responses to the phrase, man up. 1, f*** you. 2, if you want to question my masculinity like a schoolyard circle of curses, like a sword fight with lightsaber erections, save your breath, because contrary to what you may believe, not every problem can be solved by growing a pair. You can't arm wrestle your way out of depression. The CEO of the company that just laid you off does not care how much you bench, and I promise there is no light beer in the universe full-bodied enough to make you love yourself. 3. Man up? That's that new superhero, right? Like mild-mannered supplement salesman Mark Manstrong says the magic words, man up, and then transforms into the 5 o'clock shadow, the massively muscled, deep-voiced, leather-duster-wearing Superman who defends the world from, I don't know, feelings. 4. Of course. Why fight to remove our chains when we can simply compare their lengths? Why step outside the box when the box has these badass flame decals on it? We men are cigarettes. Dangerous. And poisonous. 5. You ever notice how nobody ever says woman up? They imply it, but you generally don't hear it, like, stated explicitly. Because women and the women's movement figured out a long time ago that being directly, explicitly ordered around by commercials, magazines, music, and media is dehumanizing. When will men figure that out? 5. The phrase man up suggests that competence and perseverance are uniquely masculine traits. 6. The phrase man up suggests that competence and perseverance, both good things, are also uniquely masculine traits. That women, not to mention any man or anyone else who doesn't eat steak or drive a big truck or have lots of sex with women, are nothing. More than anything, though, it suggests that to be yourself, whether you wear skinny jeans or rock a little eyeliner or drink some other brand of light beer or write poetry, will cost you. 7. How many boys have to kill themselves before this country acknowledges that problem? How many women have to be assaulted? How many trans people have to be murdered? We teach boys how to wear the skin of a man, but we also teach them how to raise that skin like a flag and draw blood for it. 8. Boy babies get blue socks, right? Girl babies get pink socks. What about purple? What about green? What about orange? Cerulean, black, tie-dyed, buffalo plaid, rainbow, 9. I want to be free to express myself, man up. I want to have meaningful emotional relationships with my brothers, man up. I want to be weak sometimes, man up. I want to be strong in a way that isn't about physical power or dominance, man up. I want to talk to my sons about something other than sports, man up. I want to be who I am, man up. 10. No.
Kyle Guante Tronmeyer. He's a hip-hop artist and 2-time National Poetry Slam champion. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come back for more. To the Best of Our Knowledge is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Charles Monroe Kane put this episode together, along with Mark Rickers. And a shout-out to ace reporter Alexandra Hall, who shared her story of investigating the Proud Boys with us, and to sound designer and technical director Joe Hartke, who made it sing. The executive producer of To the Best of Our Knowledge is Steve Paulson. I'm Ann Strainchamps, and I'm so glad you were here with us today.